So that's what baby face does.
Yeah, when you get creepy and you have a baby face, like, people are like, that's where they automatically go.
You're not just scary, you're also a deviant pervert or something.
Yeah, exactly. You're too angelic. So when you go bad, you go really bad, Satan.
Welcome to another episode of Jabber and the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree and politely apologizes for missing an episode last week.
Yeah. Well, we were busy. I don't apologize.
You apologize for nobody.
No. No, no.
You are Richard Wally from Portland, Oregon.
And you are Race Cassidy Robinson from California.
Yes, but nobody calls me by that name.
Nobody calls... That's the unmentionable one. Only, you don't like it when I say that one.
So. Yes, only doctors and teachers on the first day of school call me Race before I quickly correct them.
And Richard Wally.
And Richard Wally, yes.
I like it. I mean, I like calling you it because...
It makes me uncomfortable.
First of all, it makes you uncomfortable, I think, is part of it. But the other part is like, it's like a Hanna-Barbera cartoon character, and it just,
yeah,
I don't know. It's,
that's the thing though, Race Bannon, he's, I can't live up to that name. He's too cool.
But I want you to. I believe
he's like
you.
This fun adventure, you know, like James Bondy / Indiana Jones type character, and I just can't
exactly.
Live up to that.
But Indiana Jones, he was an archaeologist, so I mean, that's just as nerdy as a film critic.
I think Race Bannon and Indiana Jones might disagree as they're punching out Nazis and the Sheik and whatever.
Yeah, you're maybe a little right, but I don't know. All the archaeologists I know, they're kind of nerdy.
Yeah.
But
well, okay. That's true. That's the sad reality of people outside of the film world.
Yes, yes, yes.
The real world, as we like to call it.
Damn that reality get in the way again.
What have you been up to?
I was before I called you, I was adventuring in a dungeon.
Wow, that can mean a lot of things to a lot of different people.
Yeah, I know. I'll leave that open to you, how you interpret it. Choose your own adventure answer.
Mm-hmm. I'm guessing probably live-action role-playing, not like the type that involves electrical tape and clamps.
Maybe. Not the live-action. It's like it's the masturbatory video game version called RPGs.
Mm.
It's the Skyrim. So.
Oh, you're rimming again.
I am rimming again.
Did you just like give up because it's a game that never ends and now you're just jumping back in, or did you start all over again?
I started all over again. This is my problem specifically. For some reason, the Fallout games, I'm methodical and I can go through and just destroy and collect, and I go through those games. I cover every inch of ground. I explore and find everything in that game I can. In the Skyrim games, or the Elder Scroll games, excuse me, I get distracted and I just fucking run around and don't even know what I'm doing like half the time. Or I cut wood for hours and hours and I'm just like, what am I doing this?
And you just forget about the missions.
Yeah, and I don't end up doing any of them.
Yeah. They're probably, I mean, I'm not really a gamer, but I have watched people play these games. I would say probably... They're the most sandboxy of all the sandbox games.
Yeah, they're pretty sandboxy.
Yeah.
And they just get like bigger and more ridiculous and like more detailed, and like you're just giving your life to them is basically what happens. You go, I'm going to trade my life for your life because your life is more exciting than mine.
Your life has
And
dragons.
yeah, your life has dragons, mine does not.
Oh, well, that's fun. I'm still balls deep in final papers.
Haha.
I gave my final presentation for one of my papers a week ago, which is why we didn't record, as I had to find sources for that. And I went to the library to look at the PCA files. And I thought,
Yeah.
like, modern technology, whatever it is, they're all going to be on like a disk or something like that. Not so much. They're on microfilm, which I don't know if you've ever.
I have. That's exciting.
Yeah, it really kind of was, because I'm looking at like these old memos from like the 1930s that are being sent back and forth in the production code, and I felt like Encyclopedia Brown.
No, I really, I would go to the library sometimes, and when I'd be there, I would just play. Like, I mean, in my mind, something exciting was happening, but it really wasn't. But I'd play on like the microfilm of like old papers and stuff.
Yeah.
I think at one point, were you with, I'm pretty sure, I can't remember who was all there. I know Keith was, and I know I was there, and we went to the library and we used the microfilm to try to find ghosts in Pocatello.
I remember being invited to that, but I think I had to work.
Oh,
I
okay.
remember you guys calling me and like, we're going ghost hunting. It's
Yeah,
one of those
we
kind of
did.
days.
Yeah. It sounds so much more embarrassing when I admit that in like real public
You're like, oh yeah,
forum.
that is something I did.
Yeah.
That's a
I mean, I would do it tomorrow too, but I'm not lying, but it's just a little more like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do that in my spare time.
Every once in a while, your life is like an episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah, a lot of the time.
The gang goes on a ghost hunt.
You know, I watch that and sometimes I like laugh and then I realize that it's not that far from reality, even though it seems like it, and I'm like, man,
You were
I'm Charlie. I'm fucking Charlie.
you relate to it a little too much sometimes.
Yeah. Down in the basement, bashing rats, doing the Richard chores.
cleaning the bathrooms.
Yes, cleaning the bathrooms.
The other piece of exciting news is I finally have a job, kind of. Yeah.
That's I guess that's exciting.
My professor, my theory professor, film theory professor, she emailed me and asked me if I wanted to help her on a research project. She's writing a book. She's Korean. And she's writing a book on the Korean director Bong Joon-ho, who
Okay.
directed Mother and The Host
Yeah.
and the film Snowpiercer, which is coming out later this year.
Yeah, I'm semi excited for that one.
Yeah. She's writing a book about him, and she wants me to be help with research. So I'm getting, it's like 10 hours a week. It's not like crazy hard, and I can do it from home. Basically, I guess I'll be compiling reviews and transcribing interviews.
That's really no, cool. It is exciting.
Yeah.
'Cause when you said job, I'm like, "Oh, you're going to be doing Charlie chores." But
Cleaning the bathrooms of the Dodge studio. Yeah.
yeah, exactly.
Sweeping the sets. So we better move on to the news. We got a lot of reviews we're going to be making up for last week as well.
A
So
lot of
we'll be
great content.
reviewing Frozen, Old Boy, Nebraska, and Out of the Furnace. So we're not going to have a pet topic this week, but we are going to do a little bit of movie news or as much as we can. So I'll let you start.
Okay, so I'm starting, huh? Well, let's just knock out some of this news. One is just verifying that Drew Goddard of Cabin of the Woods and Lost and all that other good stuff, he did get confirmed to be doing the Daredevil miniseries on Netflix.
Yeah.
That is best case scenario. I'm very excited. Just wanted to knock that out and say, great.
Yeah, we had speculated or heard speculation about it a few weeks ago, so now it's been confirmed.
Yeah, and the best case scenario,
Yeah,
I think.
works out.
Yeah. Another, again, just getting Marvel news out of the way. Apparently that they are in development of the Captain Marvel, but the female version. And I think that that's great. I think that that's an awesome character to, female character that I think could really hit the screen in a positive way. So that we could have, you know, a female version of a superhero.
And I read in the same article, it speculates that the reason this was greenlit, is because it was shortly after the numbers for both Frozen and Catching Fire. We're having another one of those periods where everyone in the industry goes, wait, women go to movies?
Yeah, right. no, I think it could be, if it does its job, I think it could be very, very cool for both male and female audiences.
You know more about Captain Marvel than I do.
It's a convoluted character, and we were talking about it. It's been a man sometimes, it's been a woman sometimes. I believe it was a woman that turned into a man for a period of time, and now, but the most recent iteration is a very strong female character, and it's been I forgot her name, Kelly Sue DeConnick, I want to say. She's been writing a run on it that's been very popular, and so I think that it does have promise, and I think that it could be turned into a pretty good one. I like to always put into perspective that, like, when you think of Iron Man and Thor and Captain America and all these weren't A-list characters.
No.
When it was first turned into screen, and now they are.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there are a lot of characters within the Marvel universe that do have a lot of potential to be.
And we should disambiguate. There is a Captain Marvel from DC. Yes. Shazam, as he's also known as. This has nothing to do with that. This is Marvel's version, it is like a cosmic powered entity.
Yes, very good. I always forget about how we have to do those kind of things.
Yeah, well, because weirdly enough, I think the DC Captain Marvel is more known in the public consciousness because he had the 70s TV show.
Yeah, no, he definitely is.
All right. I guess as everyone probably heard, this was, you know, Facebook blew up last weekend when it was announced or reported that Paul Walker, actor from the Fast and the Furious movies, ironically died in a fiery car accident on the way back from a charity event in California while they were on downtime from the production of Fast and the Furious 7, which was set to be released, I think, like a year from now. James Wan directing from The Conjuring and the Saw movies. There was talk about how is the production going to continue with him not in the plan anymore. How far were they along in the movie? Do they have to do any reshoots? Are they going to try and write around it? And apparently, they were planning on just doing a hiatus, letting everyone grieve, and then kind of finding a way to pick it back up. But it's been announced that they're actually going to stop the production and possibly try and restart it. So, I think it's interesting because we talked about when we reviewed Fast and Furious 6, how the Paul Walker character is kind of being edged out anyway.
Yeah.
Like he used to be the main character. He was the cipher basically for the audience because you enter this world through his eyes. And now he's kind of been becoming more and more a side character in this gang. So though they have to stop and they have to do reshoots and it's going to be terribly expensive, I'm sure. I think, you know, not to be too flippant about his death, but I think it wouldn't be that difficult.
No, I think you can go the family there. I mean, story wise is pretty easy. There's the family angle. There's all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm going to be nice about this. It was ironic and tragic. Basically it's going to be, I don't think it's going to be that hard. I don't think these films are really built on their characters as much as they are about big cars going fast and crashing into shit.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that they, the way that they are written and the, how they're kind of based on ensemble, that they can kind of survive if one of these characters has to go for one reason or the other. I kind of think Vin Diesel has to be there. I think he might be him, and now maybe The Rock, are kind of mainstays. I think they would alter box office more than Paul Walker's character.
Sure.
But it'll be interesting to see how it changes the
dynamics. And definitely, even though we're cold-hearted bastards and we're okay with him not being in the movie, it is tragic that he died.
Well, he was a younger guy, and you know, he was 40 years old, but he looked 32. He had that Hollywood thing going for him, and you know, he was just probably coming into his biggest success with this weird reemergence of this franchise.
Yeah, agreed.
But c'est la vie. going from that into this next story, Fast and the Furious actress Gal Gadot, or Gal Gadot, I'll let you decide, has just recently been cast as Wonder Woman in the Man of Steel sequel of Batman-Superman. So now it's Batman-Superman and Wonder Woman and maybe Nightwing. This has essentially become a JLA movie, even if they're not calling it that.
Yeah, I think I fictitiously referred to it as Justice League Half.
Yeah.
I kind of knew they were going to do this, and you don't know. She could just be a blip of, like, introducing her.
Yeah.
That kind of thing, like they have in the Marvel Universe, that kind of thing. Are we going to get into the fact that, I mean, you can completely decide that you want to edit this out, but I'm actually not pleased with her casting. I think she's fairly good looking, and I think if I remember her correctly from the movies, she's, you know, she can do the action stuff, but I'm of the opinion that they should have got somebody. They didn't need to get the very thin supermodel-y type. I think they needed to get a bigger, stronger looking woman for Wonder Woman.
That has been the controversy with this casting choice, is her build. Given that the character of Wonder Woman has always been known as Amazonian, and she's kind of large and buxom in that unrealistic superhero comic kind of way, so I think there is some room for variation there.
Sure.
If you wanted to cast somebody that looked like she does in the comic, you would have to, like, build somebody like a robot, or you would have to find, like, one of those weightlifting, super testosterone-y women.
With a beard and a mustache, sure.
Yeah.
No, I don't, I understand that aspect. And it's just that the actress is very, very thin. And I'm not saying like that as a bad thing or a good thing or whatever. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying she is very thin. And that I personally think that this is one of those ones where you could use a real woman, like, getting into that ground, huh? Where you could use just a more filled out or buxom, as you used it. I like that word, voluptuous woman. In the role,
yeah,
maybe not go so typical Hollywood.
Some people thought about Gina Carano in the role. I've heard other names too bounded about for that. You know, this is one of those ones I really don't have a dog in this hunt. I don't care enough about Wonder Woman to really be upset about the casting. I know that she's an important character, and if she were to have her own film. She almost had a television series. It didn't happen. She had a television series back in the 70s. And she's well known. She's a well known superhero character in, you know, the regular public consciousness. But I don't think she's that interesting of a character. I know that she's archetypal and people sort of like that about her. But I think there's much more interesting female superheroes that deserve their own movies before her. And I don't know how well a lot of her mythology is going to play in a realistic, you know, especially coming off of the tone of Man of Steel. You know, we're talking invisible jets and lassos of truth, and she's at best kind of a Thor sort of character.
She's exactly a Thor kind of character.
You would need to treat it as such, and I I don't know if that's what Snyder and company have in mind.
Yeah, I don't know, truthfully. And like I said, it's just it for me, it's more about the representation of females within these works, and specifically getting that thin supermodel-y look for it. I just personally,
yeah,
it has nothing to do with the character, because I agree with you. I've never been that drawn to her or that interested in the character herself itself. But it specifically, I was like, you know, this is a one of the big female characters, and representing her, I just feel like it should be somebody who is maybe not atypical of the Hollywood female body and look type of right now.
Yeah. What is your next one?
Well, that was supposed to be my next one.
Oh.
So I will go on and talk a little bit about how Disney has purchased the Indiana Jones as well. I didn't know that this wasn't part of the Lucasfilm. I thought that this was part of it. I didn't know if just some of the subsidiary rights were still part of Fox or what, I guess.
Yeah.
And now it's just official that Disney has them. But I wasn't really that surprised, and a lot of people were like blowing up about it.
Yeah, it was one of those kind of news stories where I saw it and I'd go, well, isn't that the case? Isn't that a given?
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe there was something tied up that they had to, you know, cut some red tape before it was officially theirs, and that happened, but there it is. You know, do you really want to see more Indiana Jones movies? Because we're getting them.
Not really. That specifically, too, is such a place, and, like, I think that the idea is fun.
Yeah.
But I think you can still kind of do those kind of pulpy action adventure kind of period stuff without it having to be.
Do you want
to
see
Jones?
Do you want to see?
I don't want to
see Gore Verbinski's 4-hour Indiana Jones movie with gigantic set pieces that just go on and on forever, and
well,
weird mysticism that makes no sense.
Sure. No. Who is it? No, that's all fair. Who is? No, no. The producer on that. It's not Joel Schumacher. It's
you're another one of those names that pisses you off. Bruckheimer.
Brockheimer.
Yeah, he has no. He's not in Disney anymore.
No, he's not. So that might be a Gore Verbinski kind of decider too.
Yeah,
because he's always been under.
I mean, they have their other stable of directors like Chris Columbus and John Turteltaub and those kind of people. But
well, if it's Christopher Columbus, it's just going to be the most boring, like dull, flat piece of crap we've ever watched. But.
You know what I would actually, if they were going to continue on making something with this property, mm-hmm. I would say a good direction to go would be young Indiana Jones, so that you don't have to wheel out old ass Harrison Ford who doesn't want to be there anymore, or deal with like fucking his son and, you know, all of that stuff that happened. Yeah. And, you know, now it's Indiana Jones in the 70s. Like, we don't want to see that.
Well, I always... The other problem I have with doing that specifically, I think they just need to move on and do something either similar or just... Okay, this is my problem. So, if, you know, when he was in his 20s and 30s, or his, I guess, his late 20s and 30s and 40s,
yeah.
And he was doing these big, huge adventures, if you do these young Indiana Jones movies now, they're going to be like way bigger, mm-hmm. way more blown up and Gore Verbinski-esque, as you said.
Yeah.
And not only that, they're going to, it's not going to make sense to me, because that trilogy of films, they were supposed to be the pinnacle of his adventures, but then you show this younger Indiana Jones that has even bigger adventures.
Yeah.
And so to me, it's just like,
he's like fighting an army of mummies or something.
Yeah. I mean, Star Wars, you can branch out and fucking billions of ways.
Yeah.
Like, really. This property, though, it's so centric around not a universe, but a character that I don't think... I guess you could, like, base it on one of, like, his rat-faced drones, or maybe, like, the Adventures of Short Round or something, but...
I doubt that'll happen.
Yeah, I doubt so, too.
It's probably... I don't know. Whatever. There it is.
Yeah, it's out there.
It's probably gonna happen, but... I think we should probably move on. There's other stuff here. It's on our Facebook page if you're interested. facebook.com/jabberpodcast. You'll see the other news items we posted.
Yeah.
But we should move on to our reviews. And do you want me to knock out Oldboy and Frozen now, or do you want to do something together first?
Just knock them out.
Just knock them out? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Sounds good to me. I'll start with the new Disney film Frozen, which you refused to see.
Yeah, I did.
So this is done by the same creative team who did Tangled a few years back, which was also kind of a surprise hit. A lot of people went in with very low expectations, knowing that Disney's animation studio had, at the time, was kind of faltering. And Tangled ended up being halfway watchable, and it was kind of surprising. And of course, John Lasseter, the producer who was previously working on Pixar, has now been kind of jumping back and forth between Pixar and Disney. And ever since, the Disney-produced films like Tangled and last year's Wreck-It Ralph have been doing much better. Frozen continues on that success as it is winning weekends, and it is about to eclipse Catching Fire's winning streak. And the plot is based on an old Hans Christian Andersen story called The Snow Queen, but it's very loosely based on it. I remember The Snow Queen. This is pretty much nothing like it, except for there is a person with snow powers. And the basic story is there's a girl named, two sisters named Anna and Elsa. Elsa has snow powers. Anna does not. When their kids are playing around, Elsa accidentally hurts Anna and puts her into a snow coma. She's magically revived, but Elsa has to keep her snow powers a secret, and she has to avoid Anna for the rest of Anna's life so that she doesn't expose herself and remind Anna what happened as they're trying to keep a secret. So years later, they're in their 20s. Elsa's having her coronation as queen, and Anna announces she's just been engaged to a young prince-type person named Hans, and it causes Elsa to accidentally expose her snow powers, which makes her have to leave the kingdom in embarrassment, and unintentionally she sets upon this freeze over the summer, and they're losing all their crops and their production. So Anna has to go on an adventure to find her sister and convince her to come back home and to stop the snowpocalypse.
Wow, that's kind of epic, you know?
It sounds more epic than it actually is. This movie's fine. I think it's totally enjoyable. I get why people like it. It has the old school kind of Disney spirit. It has that kind of like early 90s Beauty and the Beast and Little Mermaid princess kind of Broadway vibe that Disney was going for at that time. There's lots of musical numbers, and they're integrated into the plot pretty carefully, and some of the songs are fairly memorable, some less so. There is a little bit of kind of that Disney pop girl influence in these songs. It wasn't there in like the Howard Ashman days of Disney, but it's fine. I think my problem with the movie is the construction of the plot is not as tight as the Disney classics, and I think ultimately this movie does not hold a flame to those movies that we still talk about 30, 40 years later. And the reason why is I think a lot of the plot, the tension seems really manufactured. There's really only the only reason the things happen in the plot is because there's these mechanical ways that the characters get separated and have to come back together. We also don't really get to know Elsa very well. We know Anna very well, and she's very quirky and fun. Kristen Bell does her voice. Elsa, like her character, is a little cold and a little distant, and we never get to understand her sympathy all that much, other than she's, you know, kind of repressed and embarrassed. But we spend so much time with Anna trying to find her sister and the side characters they introduce, a magic snowman named Olaf, played by Josh Gad, who's less annoying than you think he's going to be from the preview. And he actually has a fun number in the movie as well. But I actually could have used a little bit more time with Elsa to really drive home the emotional strand in this movie. It kind of feels like it's missing a villain. There's no classic Disney villain in here. There's a few elements in here story-wise that I don't think are ironed out as well as they need to be for this to 100% work. But it's certainly enjoyable. It does have a nostalgic kind of classic Disney feel. But I think it's fleeting. I think months from now, years from now, people are not going to remember Frozen as well as they think they are.
I forget how much of a Disney aficionado you are.
So
some of the shit you bring up, I'm like, okay, cool, dude.
The people in the know will know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know. Really?
Your wife will know what I'm talking about. All right. Old Boy. This is the remake that's directed by Spike Lee, based upon the Chanwook Park classic from 2003, the Korean film, hyper-violent, kind of a retelling of sorts of the Count of Monte Cristo type story. It's a revenge crime narrative. We have the main character who's played by Josh Brolin. His name is Joe Doucette in this film. And he's a drunkard and kind of an asshat, and he's a businessman. I mean, he is. He's a businessman who, like, doesn't mind hitting on his clients, and he misses his three-year-old's birthday, and he gets seduced by a mysterious woman with a yellow umbrella and ends up locked in a hotel room for 20 years. And within this time, the only window he has to the outside world is a television, which he watches, you know, a bunch of major historical things happen, like Clinton being elected and 9/11 and then Obama, as well as these little telecasts from a television series, kind of a true crime television series, where he sees that the people who's locked him away has framed him for the murder and rape of his wife. He every once in a while gets some notes and stuff about what has happened to his daughter. One day, while he's almost escaped, he awakens in a field after being knocked out by sleeping gas. He awakens in a field, fully dressed in a new suit, and he has been let free 20 years later. And his plan is to get revenge on the mother effers who put him there. He meets a girl, played by Elizabeth Olsen, who kind of helps him along his journey. And if you've seen the first one, if you've seen the Chanwook Park movie, you know that a bunch of crazy shit happens. A lot of violent shit. And Spike Lee, this is not a Chanwook Park movie, though he does try and include that sort of Asian, Korean crime feel. There's a lot of stuff that's shot in a Chinatown-esque neighborhood, so he definitely has that in the milieu. There's fights that include things like samurai swords, even though the gangs are generally speaking American. Chartel Copley plays his nemesis, and he's kind of doing a kind of comic booky, a little over the top, but sort of in a fun, chewing the scenery sort of way, mincing British villain. And Elizabeth Olsen is good. She's always understated, and she knows how to do these kinds of movies. And I think that Josh Brolin is giving it his all. He kind of goes for a physical transformation in the movie, which is sort of impressive. He starts fat and becomes all buff halfway through the movie. It's fine. The thing about this movie is, if you've seen the Chanwook Park movie, then you've seen this already. You know, it's kind of like the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo remake or the Let Me In remake. All of these American remakes of creative foreign film, they pretty much just exist because Americans have no patience to read subtitles. And, you know, I think Spike Lee does a pretty good job at coloring inside the lines, but that's essentially all he's doing. If you've never seen the Chanwook Park movie, you could watch this movie and still get all the same shocks and surprises. He makes a few differences in the details of the plot, but the basic architecture of the movie is basically the same. I kind of just walked away from this thing unfazed. I was like, okay, it's maybe interesting in some places, but ultimately, I didn't need to see it. And that's, I didn't hate it, but that's really the best thing I could say about it.
I kind of figured. I had interest just because it was a cool movie. Cool Korean movie.
Yeah.
And at first I was like, oh, it's just a remake. But then, you know, the director was pretty interesting. But as you noted in those couple other movies, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and...
Let Me In.
That you're correct in both assumptions.
Yeah. They're fine, but they're they're totally unnecessary.
Yeah, no, they're way too new for a remake. They don't do anything with the actual material.
Yeah.
Apparently America, I disagree with the sentiment, but in film at least, we're no, you know, we are a universal place that is not different than anywhere else, apparently.
Yeah.
Well, and there's nothing you can say about our culture.
What's interesting about all the movies we mentioned is that none of them did well, including Old Boy. This movie has failed at the box office because of Frozen and Taking, or whatever, the last Hunger Games flick, Catching Fire.
I thought that the other two did okay.
No, not really. I think they were both kind of commercial disappointments. They didn't flop, but they didn't do well enough to, you know, continue with the Dragon Tattoo.
Well, that's what
remakes.
I was saying. And I did know a lot of people who, you know, weren't as into foreign films that wouldn't that didn't see Let the Right One In. I can't remember. There's a slight difference in the names, but the Swedish or Norwegian or whatever one, the original one, that's good. I know people who saw the Matt Reeves one and liked it.
Yeah.
And I, you know what, I enjoy it. It was fine watching it, but I might as well have watched the original one.
That's the thing. It's you know, if you copy a masterpiece, is it still a masterpiece? No.
Well, no, we learned that from Psycho.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it was almost beat for beat.
Yeah.
It was just like shot like a comic.
And he takes some creative liberties as far as like the framing and the shots. But like I said, the beats of the story still happen basically in the same places. I just kind of, it's sort of an anomaly of a film. I don't really know what to feel about it.
Well, that's why, I mean, I don't think that The Magnificent Seven is like one of the best Westerns or anything, but it's definitely enjoyable. And so if you're going to do a remake, you have to at least separate it from its subject material somewhat, I think.
Yeah.
I think you've got to do something with it a little bit different. Or have some kind of in or some kind of way that you're going to change it enough for it to mean something or be something.
Yeah.
So with The Magnificent Seven and Seven Samurai, even though the samurai films and the Westerns, they're very similar, it was different enough. So I think you have to do something like that in order to do something like that.
But, so that it has its own personality, its own presence.
Yeah, and it's its own movie.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, well, let's move on now to the movies we did see. Do you want to do Nebraska first or Out of the Furnace?
Let's get Out of the Furnace out of the way.
Okay, I'll let you set it up.
Oh, sounds
good.
I've
done enough talking.
Okay, you have done quite a bit, haven't you? Okay, so we've got a movie by Scott Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not very familiar with him. Has he done anything else of note?
Yeah, he did Crazy Heart. Jeff Bridges country music movie.
I actually have not watched that.
It's okay.
So.
It's a good movie.
Okay. Well, I've meant to check it out. Maybe I'll get around to it at some point. But this movie, it stars a plethora of people. And if you watched the preview, you knew that for it. But basically what it's about is these two brothers who live kind of a shitty Appalachian life. And it's just basically about their story and how one goes to prison and the other one ends up getting deep into these mobsters and one gets killed and they lead out a revenge. It's actually a very common, the actual story to me was just a very normal noir revenge movie
basically. Yeah.
Except it was set in Appalachian. So it's very much in tone of Winter's Bone and I was going to say the other one is this year we watched the movie Prisoners. Is the other
similar? Yeah, mind. I would say. Yeah,
I in the gritty and that kind of tone, I agree. However, what I think makes Prisoners and Winter Bone a much better film than this. This one just was. It's actually, I've got to kind of steal some of your words here and say that it's kind of just by the numbers. I didn't find anything very interesting about this. It was pleasant enough to watch. Well,
pleasant isn't, it's kind of a difficult word for this movie, but yeah.
No, sometimes it was a little over the top easily said. I don't know. I found this movie, the actual, not to do anything very interesting with the noir or the Appalachian. It was just kind of more like poor white folk porn. Like that, that's basically how I felt about it. I didn't really see that it added that much. I get that a lot of it is adding to that whole, we're in a economic depression kind of.
Yeah, there's certainly a recession vibe to the movie. Yeah. And as well as kind of the blue collar struggle in general. Also, there's some other political subtext because you have the Casey Affleck character, one of the brothers, who is just returned from Iraq or Iran, one or the other. And he, Iraq. And during the whole time that that Christian Bale's character is in prison, he's in Iran, and he can't, when they reunite, he's has sort of PTSD, and he's dealing with that. Their father is dying of cancer, and yeah, nobody's having a lot of fun in this movie.
No, it's a very grim movie, but they, I don't know. There's, to me, it just didn't really have a lot of style, and I don't know. He hit the noir style and all that kind of stuff, but it didn't have enough. To me, it just seemed kind of eh. I didn't really get much out of this film. The performances were all pretty decent, mm-hmm. as you would expect from a cast that has Woody Harrelson, Christian Bale, Casey Affleck, Sam Shepard, William Dafoe. I mean,
yeah.
This has a ton of, you know, but it doesn't really, I don't know, it didn't really do much for me. It just felt like I got a very typical noir story set in the Appalachians. And like I said, the couple movies that we mentioned, I thought there was more Prisoners and
Winter's Bone.
I thought had a lot more style to them, at least, and were a little bit more interesting, whereas this just kind of seemed run of the mill.
Run of the steel mill?
Yeah. Oh, that was cute. No, you're very right. It was very run of the steel mill. I don't know. It seemed like it was almost like, There was a lot of cliche. I also thought that the Woody Harrelson character, the starting with him in that first scene was just, I didn't think it did any favors for the movie.
Interesting. I actually didn't hate this. I won't say it's the best movie of the year or that it's, you know, a must go see kind of movie. I think you're fine if you rent it. But I think I actually kind of enjoyed it. I thought that the tensions were believable. I think all the performances are really good. Christian Bale is really playing it very low key in this movie, and he's really a Western esque sort of vibe where he's sort of the internalized man.
I thought he was just a hillbilly Bruce Wayne, but
yeah. I mean, I think that's sort of what he's trying to evoke, but I think he does it fairly well. I actually really liked Woody Harrelson in this movie. I thought this is one of his most evil characters, like through and through. He is not a good man in this movie, and it's funny to like see this and think of him as, you know, at one point he was Woody from Cheers, and it was kind of this comic character. And in this, his teeth are stained. He's high on meth. He's just craggly, but he has a lot of menace. And I thought that he played it off very well.
No, I'm not discrediting the actors. Like I said, you expect this kind of level from all of them.
Yeah.
Mine was all editing and storytelling. And
it takes a while to get going.
Well, first of all, I didn't think that first scene was necessary.
Which first scene?
The very first scene, the lead into the film, where you, I don't think that it really helped the pacing at all. the scene at the drive-in with the hot dog.
Oh, and... well, I actually kind of like that as a little.
I think he would have been just as. No, I see, and I didn't. I thought it was very 90s villain-esque. I thought it was. It was too. I don't mind operatic, but this to me was too operatic in that sense. It was too over the top and too. Like I said, to me, this was very by the numbers. I didn't get much out of it. It was entertaining enough, but it was to me just kind of okay.
I think.
And like I said, I think it's going to be very forgettable.
I think for me, it had sort of an accumulative effect because as I was watching it, like especially during the first half when he's in jail and he's you know, Zoe Saldana plays his girlfriend, who I think is actually the most miscast. Considering how frumpy everybody is in this movie, I think they should have had like a what's her name from The Help? Octavia Spencer, like that type of person should have been his girlfriend, not Zoe Saldana. They try and frump her up, but it's not convincing at all. But anyway, I think, you know, during the whole first half of the movie when they're just kind of soaking in their misery, when you finally get into the noir stuff and the revenge story stuff, I think that it actually, I don't know, by the end of the movie, when the, you know, the big showdown, I was totally invested. I was leaning in for my seat and like my hands are, you know, on my chin, just kind of waiting for all this stuff to pay off. And I think it does. I don't think this is a masterpiece by any means. I don't think that it's a great film, but I think it's a good film.
Again, I'm not. To me, it was by the numbers, and it was fine. You're right. It was. I didn't regret being there, but at the same time, I just didn't.
That's what they should. That's the tagline they'll put on the poster. I didn't regret being there, Richard Wally.
Yes. I hope. No, I just didn't get much from it. If we're talking about, you know,
yeah,
especially at this level of film
and with the cast involved,
with the cast and everything, which sometimes I think is actually part of the problem, because you don't get any surprises from the acting because you're like, oh, okay, yeah, that's about right. Oh, yeah, that's about right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's about right. I don't know. For me, this film was okay. That's about it. I think you're right. If you want a Appalachian noir movie, this is pretty decent. I would much rather just tell you to watch Winter's Bone, though. That wasn't that long ago. Much more entertaining.
I kind of like this more, but...
But you're...
I'm wrong. I mean, yeah, I'm not, but the world seems to think I am.
It, though. Yeah, you are.
I never really understood the hype about Winter's Bone, but there it is.
I think it was more entertaining, had more style. I thought that the characters and the performances were more interesting. Yeah, that's why. this was just run-of-the-mill. Nothing very exciting going on for me.
Okay.
But why don't we move on to our next one? Because I think... I don't know. Do you have more to say about this one? I don't.
No, I don't. We can move on. We'll move on now to our last review of the... of the new releases, and that is Alexander Payne's Nebraska, which is one of the first movies he's done, I want to say, if not the very first movie he's done, where he was not the screenwriter. This was written by Bob Nelson, and that made me a little nervous walking in, because I consider Alexander Payne, who'd previously done Election, About Schmidt, Sideways, The Descendants, I always really consider him very much a screenwriter, writer-director. His direction is all very tuned into his writing, but it's actually a pretty seamless transition. I forgot about that within 5 minutes of the film. But the basic story of this movie is Will Forte from Saturday Night Live plays David Grant, who's kind of a middle-aged, kind of a regular schlub living in where do they live? In Montana, right?
They live in Billings.
Billings, Montana. I have family actually live there. He's, you know, he sells stereos at like a Best Buy type place, and his father is played by Bruce Dern, and he's an older man who's kind of an alcoholic, is starting to run into his twilight years, and he sort of maybe possibly has a little bit of dementia. But, you know, he's a man of few words, and he's a little impenetrable as far as, like, getting close to his family and his kids. And he gets this thing in the mail that says, you know, some piece of spam that says that if you sign this thing and turn it in, you're eligible for $1 million. And Bruce Dern seems to believe that this is actually going to happen, but he doesn't trust sending it in the mail, so he tries to get all the way to Omaha by himself, where he is from. And this leads to basically what is a road movie where Will Forte decides to entertain his aging father, his last big adventure in life, and take him himself to Omaha, where they eventually rendezvous with his wife, played by June Squibb, and his old timey old town friends, one of which played by Stacy Keach. And it's just kind of a character study about getting to know these people, kind of understanding the middle America small town experience. It has to do with, you know, coming into your twilight years and your life of disappointment and regrets and all of those kinds of things, as well as kind of a family drama, dark comedy in here as well. And I thought this movie was terrific, and it really, I don't know, it reminded me a lot of being a small town person and what that experience is like, even if I always had aspirations for being a city person. It is still a part of my experience. And I thought that it really captured it kind of perfectly, even if some of the stuff is a little caricature-ish. I think it plays all of it really well. And despite the fact that there's a lot of kind of bummer themes in this movie, I laughed at this movie, I think, more than anything I've seen this year. What did you think?
I almost completely agree with you. I thought the performances were great. There were a lot of character studies, but I think this film is a lot about our time and our time right now, mm-hmm. and about kind of our economic situations and stuff like that.
Yes.
So I don't think it's just simply a character study. I think there are some very strong under themes and stuff that are running through it. I did have a little bit of a reaction. Okay, so I've got to explain this, because this is another bias for me personally. Okay, when I watched Napoleon Dynamite, mm-hmm. I didn't find it nearly as funny as I should have, because I had some connection to that world and I found it very sad.
We should tell the audience, Napoleon Dynamite was filmed 50 miles from where we lived.
Yes.
And the culture that is depicted in the film is not as alien to us as it was for the rest of America when that movie came out.
Exactly. And I knew some of those characters. And even though they were characters, the same in this one, I knew a lot of those people. For me, it almost felt like a family reunion at times, especially when he goes back to his old hometown and stuff like that.
In Nebraska.
So, no, in Nebraska, in Hastings or whatever that was. I can't remember the exact name of his town,
yeah.
even though that's where the majority of the movie was almost. Mm-hmm. But no, I knew these people. So I had that kind of like almost depression watching this, even though it was very funny. And but overall, I think it's kind of a positive movie.
I think so, too, especially the father-son stuff. I think.
Yeah, I think it's terrific. And I do think that the undertone is the fact that this Bruce Dern character is this old drunk that just wanted to impress and say yes to everybody.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of sums up a little bit what's wrong with our economy. Everybody wanted to show off, and now there's a younger generation that can only get jobs as fucking stereo equipment salesmen. And that's about as good as they can do.
That's as far up the social ladder as they'll ever get. Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought that this film was very good. I understand why people like it. I found it, at first I was very into the idea. I was like, oh, the black and the white, it'll make it such a stark thing. It'll make it good. And it did. But the funny thing is it did not soak that much there, it almost didn't change those environments very much.
There, yeah,
the color saturation pulling that out. I still like that they did that. I do like black and white when it's used in an appropriate way, such as in this film.
So you do like the black and white?
Oh, I do. Okay. Yeah. I just found it funny that it didn't really take away from the color very much.
No, yeah, because a lot of these,
like, you could hardly tell.
A lot of these towns are probably fairly monochromatic as it is, but it certainly does push that. And I tried to think about that. I said, you know, what was the purpose of the black and white? Because whenever there's a film, you know, made in these days is in black and white, it's a stylistic choice. You know, has nothing to do with any other purpose other than that. So I thought, okay, what is the purpose of this choice? And I think we're supposed to be seeing this world through Bruce Dern's eyes. I think this is how he views the world. Is,
well, that's a
kind
cool
of his,
like,
perspective
that
of everywhere, whether he's in a big city like Omaha, or whether he's in his hometown, small town, or whether he's back home in Billings, it's all the same to him. He's kind of in this sort of black and white daze.
The Woody Grant character, right?
Yeah.
Played by Bert. Well, I think you can say that about his son, too. I think you're right. You're seeing it through these characters' eyes and their limited perspective of what's happening around them. I think it's great, and I think that I think it's a great movie. Again, I wish I didn't feel like so connected to it in a way.
I know that I enjoyed it more because I am.
Oh, okay. I had the opposite reaction of you.
I mean, specifically, the Bruce Dern character reminds me a lot of my living grandfather on my mother's side.
He's probably
a little more crazy than the Bruce Dern character, but...
See, for me, when the family was all together, all the brothers,
yeah,
and how they communicated, and the brother, and like Will Forte's character, and Odenkirk,
Bob Odenkirk, who plays his older brother, and the male family dynamics in this movie are spot on.
No, they're beautiful. Well, the way that they tried to communicate with the older generation,
yeah,
or make them communicate, for me was so, like, so spot on. Like, that is a normal, when our family gets together, for me, that was normal how me and my brother, like, kind of are about things.
Yeah.
So for me, it was just like, I don't know. For me, it was very hard to watch sometimes because I felt too tied into it and there wasn't enough separation.
You felt a little exposed.
Well, sometimes when there was this, like, laugh at the characters, and I felt like people were laughing at the characters, I was like, that's actually true. That's not.
No.
And I'm not saying it's a bad, I'm not saying it's a bad quality of the film. It's a very good quality of the film. I'm just saying, for me personally, it was a little bit too much playing on the heart for me.
Well, there's two reads really of this film, and I think it's going to play differently. I think it could still can play successfully in two different ways, but I think if you're from a big city and you've never really been to the Midwest and you've never really lived in a small town, you're not going to really understand what that's about. So like Napoleon Dynamite, you look at this and go, oh, isn't it funny how out of it these people are and how, you know, uncosmopolitan they are. And you can kind of laugh at them. I think if you're from their environment, from that milieu, and you understand what he's commenting on a more nuanced level, you can really sort of appreciate the familiarity of everything.
Agreed.
And you end up laughing with the characters.
Well, what I think is great about that too is the fact that Alexander Payne is from Nebraska.
Yeah.
And so he's a great person. And so this film isn't disingenuous in any sort of way.
Yeah, it never feels mocking.
It doesn't feel mocking, and it doesn't feel like, it doesn't feel like he's making fun of these people just because of where they were born and what, you know, how they were raised and stuff like that. It's a very place and time.
Yeah. And there's kind of a love of natural humor. Yeah.
Yeah. No, there's a warm feeling towards those characters. I did think it was interesting if you would kind of compare this with About Schmidt.
That is his most similar as far as the two films.
He should do one more old person from Nebraska movie, and he could have a trilogy of the old Nebraskan or something of that nature.
I'd be down for that. We should also call out June Squibb, who plays Bruce Dern's wife, and Stacy Keach, smaller characters in the movie, but I think are so good. I mean, the entire ensemble, and that's one of the things that he as a director is so good at doing, is he gets everybody involved. And no matter how small the part is, even like the character who plays the office girl at the end in Omaha when they finally go to receive their reward, even her tiny little part is so good. And you know, she probably has, I would imagine, like pages of actor's notes about what her character goes through on a daily basis or something like that. It just feels very informed, even though it's a walk-on role.
It has a weight.
Yeah.
Those are people. They're not just saying, you know, she has a life after that. She's not just a person who
walks on. Yeah.
To say some bit of necessary lines. The cousins also made me sad because I have extended family. I'm just, oh gosh.
Yeah.
No, it was sad for me to watch.
They were very reminiscent of people in my life. very much so.
Yeah.
No,
and also while talking about it, because you did bring up Stacy Keach.
Yeah.
He also, that character, I've seen that person. And it gets into some of the horror. I don't know. It's such a mixed bag of the good, the bad, and the ugly, you know, from small towns and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That it was really hard to watch. And he was one of those characters that really, you know, he's very well liked. He's one of those, you know, one of those good old boys from the town.
Yeah.
And he's kind of despicable in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And
Stacy Keach is so good at playing that. He's one of those character actors who's fine with letting the audience hate him. And he totally, you know, doesn't apologize for his characters ever.
Yeah, and I felt great that Will Forte punched him.
Yeah.
I think we should kind of say something about Will Forte and Bob Odenkirk. With Odenkirk, I knew that he had more of a range. Will Forte, I knew he was funny, but I felt like he really brought something to this role and really complimented it.
Well, certainly much more understated than like something like MacGruber. Yes.
I don't know if, yeah, did we have to bring that up? But yeah, go on.
I actually think that if there is a weak link in this movie, I do think it is Forte.
Okay.
I don't think he's bad. I think he's fine. But I think essentially his character kind of plays more as a cipher than anything else.
Sure.
And he is certainly the least interesting character in the film. That's kind of his purpose in the film, is to sort of recede and let everyone else overshadow him, because that is what he is as a person in the movie. So I don't think, like I said, he doesn't detract or anything like that, but I, you know, of all of the people in this movie who are going to get nominations, I certainly see Bruce Dern getting a nomination, if not winning. I certainly see June Squibb getting a nomination, possibly Stacy Keach. I don't really see a Forte getting any kind of nods or recognition.
No, but I think he was good, and I think he played his, you know, without trying to ham it up or,
yeah,
because a comic actor can do that very quickly, and I think that him by going very understated and going, I think was a wise choice on his part, or Alexander Payne's, or a combination of
the, yeah, the, he does what the role requires.
Well, no, I think that he brings something to it as well, a certain.
He has one really good scene, I think.
Quality.
Because the movie kind of like gets further and further away from his center of consciousness, but he has one really good scene with his father where they're sharing a beer at a bar, and I think that's really the most we get to know about him as a character.
See, I think the teeth scene, trying to find the teeth,
that was a good one too. Yeah,
I also think
a lot of the scenes with them,
the
together.
Girlfriend. Yeah, no, the father son dynamic is extraordinary. I think it's even better when you add Odenkirk in. But I also thought the one between Will Forte and his girlfriend was a good one.
And going back to the Zoe Saldana thing, there's a really interesting casting choice that they, you know, Will Forte is like this celebrity that basically everybody knows who he is, but they don't cast a Zoe Saldana type to be his girlfriend. She's, you know, this kind of heavier, normal looking, real world person. And Alexander Payne is one of the only directors who has enough guts to do that with his female characters. Or with all of his characters.
Yeah. No, I agree, and that's why I think just overall, again, I liked all of the choices.
Yeah.
Because there was also, I read a little bit ago that this David Grant, they were looking at Bryan Cranston for a little bit to play him,
That would have
and I
changed. That
actually
would have changed
think,
things a little bit, yeah.
and I think it would have. I think you needed somebody like Will Forte, somebody because I think Bryan Cranston would kind of distract from some of the other people a little bit too much.
Possibly, yeah.
He's a great actor, don't get me wrong. But no, I actually think that Will Forte was a good and interesting choice for this.
Cool.
I don't know. Yeah, again, great movie.
Yeah. I don't. It's playing limited right now. I think once the award season really gets kicking, it'll probably get a slightly wider release. I definitely
Sure.
suggest everyone seeing it. I think it's kind of a perfect film. I really loved it.
I thought it was really good. Yeah. I want to sit on it for a little bit and see where it stands. But I think this is one of I haven't seen The Descendants, but of the Alexander Payne movies I've seen, this is might be, we'll see, might one of my favorite films of his.
Cool. Well,
So.
we'll move on now to our last segment, which is the Netflix homework, which you assigned me last week. The Rabbi's Cat, an animated Algerian film, and I'll let you set it up.
Will you? This is one of the fun ones to set up because it is kind of insane. So basically, this is apparently based on a cartoon, a comic, as you would, on pen and paper, from Algeria. Basically, a cat gains sentience from eating a talking parrot, and he can talk, and he starts communicating with his rabbi and Jewish owners, who are also Algerian. And really, what this film kind of gets into is kind of some of the cultural relations between Jewish people and Muslim people. And it's basically this cat tries to get a
Bar mitzvah.
bar mitzvah.
He
There we
tries to
go.
learn
Yeah,
more
that's the
about
one.
Judaism.
Yes. And for maybe some selfish reasons. And then they go on an adventure through Africa, and then he comes
With the Russian
home.
immigrant, yeah.
Yes, and stuff happens. Lots of stuff happens.
Yes.
I picked this movie because I don't know, just every once in a while I just get a wild hair at my butt. I'm like, I want to watch something that's kind of weird and different and that I normally wouldn't
It
pick, and
certainly
this
was
was one of
that,
those.
yeah. Did you know it was based on a
Sometime
comic?
I didn't until after I assigned it and I looked up a little bit more about
Okay,
it.
because I thought that might have been your
No.
starting place with this.
No, I it just I liked the animation seemed I liked how the animation looked is why I picked it, and the name. That was it. That was all of it. I didn't read the description, anything. I just like, let's try something. This will be different from our typical milieu of noir murder or some other thing of that
Yeah.
nature. Every once in a while, some whimsical cult poppy apple kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I enjoyed it. It was definitely different. It was a there was a lot of stuff going on. I felt sometimes maybe there was a cultural divide, but I did feel like I kind of got s I did pick up on some of the undertones and stuff that was going on in it, with the different political stuff going on and
And social
about
dynamics
social,
between
yeah.
these different cultures.
Well, I thought it was also interesting, just kind of like, especially when the rabbi dad and the other, I don't know, what do you call a Muslim priest, I guess? I don't
Yeah,
know.
I don't know. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
The mo
I feel
the
silly.
Muslim version of a rabbi, whatever that is.
Yes, correct. Those two characters, their little dynamic together is very interesting when you're talking about religion and about like. Because we always talk about religion at like the top levels
Yeah.
and not this like more like people who are like, I think, I don't
On a
know.
personal level, yeah.
I think that that's really interesting, and I think I kind of toned into that and been like, that's interesting. How do we live in, you know, a world with these kind of things, and the normal man, how does he live and stuff like that? And I don't know. I liked it and kind of enjoyed those kind of things. I thought the animation, I was really into it, actually. Yeah. I thought it was really beautifully done. It was very, it kind of felt like a shotgun blast a little bit, not like in a violent way, but like if you shot something and then that blast, like that you see, that's kind of how the plot ran.
Yeah, it's a little all over the stuff place. Happening. It's a little all over the place. It's a little episodic. Exactly, I had a hard time kind of feeling for an arc in this movie. Yes. I didn't really know who was the main character, those kind of things.
Yeah, and I don't think that necessarily... I think it's good to be exposed to something like this, because I don't think that... I think it's bad to always get that three-act, who the lead character... I don't think you always... A movie needs to be
It's not traditionally told.
This just needed to be tied together a little bit more, and I don't know how exactly. But overall, I found it entertaining, and if you've got a wild hair up your butt... Mm-hmm. And like I did, and you wanted to see something maybe a little different, then this might be a fun thing to check out.
Yeah. The language is in French for the most part. There are a few characters who speak Russian.
Yes.
But for the most part, the movie is in French. It's subtitled. And this is very culturally specific. Yes. You know, this is the type of thing that is not meant to play everywhere. And you get that from it. And I do feel kind of disconnected. I feel very much like an outsider looking in. Even more so than your average foreign film, because there's not really a genre here to kind of keep you grounded, you know. But it's good. I think that it's at least interesting. And it's full of ideas, even if it kind of can't decide which ones it's more interested in at any given time. The cat character, you know, he's kind of our way into the movie. I don't know how 100% necessary he really is, to be honest. I think the rabbi character is actually more interesting. I think there's a lot of stuff going on there. I would have maybe personally focused on him more. I think it's totally an interesting, oddball animated film. The animation is very nice. And unfortunately, you have to go overseas to see traditional animation now, because America is so obsessed with 3D. So if you want to see good painterly animation, you have to go to like Miyazaki, or you have to go to something like this. But it's nice, and I think that it's very of its place and time, and its ideas are very non-American, and that's always interesting.
See, for me, the cat character, at least this is how I got into it, was kind of a convert to the religion, to the Jewish faith.
He's the skeptic,
and that's what I thought. Well, it's not just the skeptic. He's the he's you know, somebody who lives with you know, in this big body of these people.
Yeah.
He's the outsider, and he's kind of a convert to it, but he actually, like, he's trying to figure it out in a cultural context. So that's for me, that's how they separated it so much.
It sort of ends on a weird beat, I think. I don't know if it really pays off. Like, there's, because it's got sort of a road movie, basically. Not too...
At one point, yeah.
Not too unlike Nebraska. But I don't know if it really ever kind of gels as far as all of those separate strands and ideas that it's exchanging, and all the philosophizing of the movie. It kind of just sort of ends in a sort of a weird place. And I think that was one of my main issues with it, but I think that it's totally unique. It's totally its own thing. And I don't begrudge it for doing it its own way.
Exactly. And I found it to be interesting.
Yeah, and very educational.
And worthwhile.
If you're not from...
Well, for me, too, the religious themes and trying to understand religion and its place and stuff like that, I thought it was interesting at that level as well. I liked the dynamic of specifically the rabbi and his Muslim friend. I thought that was very cool.
Cool. Well, next week I'm going to assign you Douglas Sirk's Imitation of Life, which is a remake, actually. There was another film he did called Imitation of Life that was done in the 30s, but Sirk kind of made his version of that. And if you've never seen one of his films, probably isn't my favorite one of his, but it's as good a place as any to start. And I'll be interested to hear what you say about it, because if you've never seen a 50s melodrama before, it's a very different kind of genre that sort of doesn't exist anymore.
Okay.
Well, cool. And
I'll give it a try.
That is our episode. If anybody has any of the things, if anybody has anything to say about any of the movies we talked about this week, whether it be The Rabbi's Cat, Frozen, Old Boy, Nebraska, Out of the Furnace, plenty of things to talk about. Also, any of the things we talked about in our news segment, you can contact us at jabberandthedrone@gmail.com. We'll read your responses on the air. If you also want to weigh in on any of the things as we post them, you can find us on Facebook, as I've said before, facebook.com/jabberpodcast. Like us there. You'll see other news items that we don't discuss on the show. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and write us a review and give us a star rating. You can find us at our archives at jabberandthedrone.podbean.com, where you can also find our RSS feed and links to our iTunes as well. You can also find us on Stitcher Radio. If you go to, I have it somewhere on here, stitcher.com/podcast/jabber-and-the-drone. we're available, and you can stream us from there, I think from your phone as well as on Pocket Cast. We are searchable under the podcasts. You can read my movie reviews that I do for the Idaho State Journal at saladporkreviews.blogspot.com. You can also read other content that I've done at the Seattle's MacGuffin at mcguff.in/authors/Cassidy. And you can find Richard locked away for years and years eating pot stickers.
That's not, that actually is just my life. It's not.
You can literally find Richard doing that.
Yeah, like, I don't know what you're talking about. It's not, I'm not looking for revenge. I'm good in my life.
I'm good here. I don't need out. I got a bathroom. Yeah. I got a TV. We're good.
And you feed me pot stickers. I don't. That sounds like a good life. I don't see the problem.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Bye.